Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. And for this episode, let's dive into the world of DeFi and crypto with Chris Bradbury. So in this episode, we will be talking about Chris's journey with MakerDAO to starting his own company or co-founding it with few other co-founders called Summer.5. And we explore his mission where he wants to make DeFi or decentralized finance accessible to everyone. So in this episode, you will discover strategies for earning yield on crypto assets and potential for non-custodial solutions and insight into bridging DeFi with TradFi or traditional finance. So join us as we discover crypto's role in real-world problem solving and the importance of building user-friendly products, because Chris has a background in creating amazing user interfaces and user experiences. Nothing mentioned in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. I'm here to talk with Chris about how he built his company and how he is promoting and overcoming challenges as a founder. Finally, I do not run ads on this platform, so it would mean a lot if you can please share this episode on your social media. So with that out of the way, let's get into it. So Chris, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome to the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. And I'm super excited to talk to you about Summer.5 and find out. My first question is, how did you get started with building a DeFi protocol or a DeFi project? Yeah, what led to that?
Yeah, so well, it started back in 2018, really. Like first half of 2018, I joined Maker as one of their product managers. Well, I think it was their first product manager, really. So that was like my first foray into working in crypto. And when I joined Maker, my primary role there really was on the user interfaces. So like kind of that's my background. I think like yourself, like started off as a developer in the kind of very early days and quickly moved into the kind of product management and growth side, particularly B2C growth and retail growth more than anything else. But yeah, mainly focusing on the user interface stuff. And I did that through Maker, through the first CDP portal. So like when I first joined, we just had a what we called the DAI dashboard back in the day when it was just single collateral DAI, but where it took you about 12 clicks or 12 transactions sometimes to borrow DAI and then repay DAI, and you had to go to somewhere else to like swap DAI for some MKR to pay the stability fee and so on. Ever since then, I think we've made huge improvements on the user interface. And how that took us to Summer is when we launched multi-collateral DAI in November 2019, we didn't host the UI on MakerDAO. We took the Oasis brand that was at the time very synonymous with Maker, with Oasis Dex and so on, like this really trusted brand, and created Oasis app, which was like the default front end for multi-collateral DAI, being able to like use different collaterals and borrow DAI against it. And then it obviously required a lot of kind of infrastructure and so on behind it, because we had very much a focus on user experience and so on. So when the Maker Foundation dissolved in 2021, it wasn't something that could super easily just be kind of handed over to the community. There was a lot of kind of AWS infrastructure, there was databases and so on running behind the scenes to try and improve the UX to give users a more kind of Web 2 experience on top of Web 3, which even today is still desperately needed, in my opinion, for kind of mainstream adoption. So yeah, we took it out into a private company, which kind of leads me here, all the way up until kind of beginning of the summer when we rebranded Oasis app to Summerfi, really recognizing that we had stepped away from Maker. And that was almost our final break, really, from the old Maker days into, hey, like, we're here for all of DeFi, not just Maker, because that Oasis brand was so connected with Maker.
Yeah.
Like we love that connection with Maker, like we still do. It's still like our primary products when it comes to like users and usage and so on. Although it's what do you call it? Like its share of the market within Summers is obviously slowly diminishing as we onboard more and more protocols and more features on those protocols. Yes. But it's like a fresh cut, and that takes us to really my role here as Summer. Like I didn't use the term founder for that, because we never like really founded it. I was a product lead for Oasis app back in the foundation, but you could argue that like all 20 of us in 2021 that took Oasis into a new company, like all 20 of us were founders basically. But I took on that role as CEO with a very much a product hat as CEO, if really.
No, that it is like CEO is the one who's responsible for the ultimate product. They should know product in and out. And they should have a vision for product anyway. That's what I believe is. You cannot have a CEO who doesn't have a vision for their product. What about the name Summer? Is it from the summer, the DeFi summer? Is that where the name comes from?
Pretty much. Like that was what we, it was almost that kind of like good vibes of like upwards markets. Like you're here, like, like we build the product to hopefully help people make more of the assets they hold. So I don't think in reality there's any products out there designed to help users lose money, although there are many products out there that do lose money for their users. But yeah, the Summer brand is reflective of our values a little bit, which is it's serious but fun, like trustworthy but not boring in a way. So that kind of crypto summer, DeFi summer, like that, the energy that was in the market, the energy that was in the users, like the conferences around like that time and what the products that were being built and released, like that optimism. Really, like it's what we like DeFi Summer is all about. And that's what we're trying to bring into the brand as well. So the kind of summery colors, summery feeling, and that thing where it's not, but it's still trusted and it's still serious. Like you still take security as one of the key like priorities whenever we do anything. It can still be fun.
Yeah. If someone is not from a crypto background, from a Web2 background, how would you explain what your product does? Can you give like a use case? What would someone need to do? How would someone use your product?
Yeah, so like the one liner really is it's the best place to borrow and lend in DeFi, borrow and earn in DeFi. And earning doesn't have to just be lending. Like earning is, there's a variety of different ways you can earn on your products. So if you hold a digital asset, a crypto asset, and whether it's volatile, whether it's ETH, it's a tokenized version of BTC, like Wrapped BTC, TBTC or something like that, or you hold stables like in USD, if it's DAI or USDC or something, there's something you can do on Summer to basically make the assets do more for you, make more from the assets you hold.
So how would that work? So say if I hold, say, $1,000 of USDC, what would I do with that?
So there's a variety of different like options and strategies really that would also depend on like your risk tolerance and what you want to do. In simplest form, you can just lend that USDC out to a lending borrowing protocol. So we don't create or run any protocols ourselves. We're just a front end. Okay. Right? So we support Aave. So we got Maker, Aave. Yeah. We had Arjuna up until recently. That's obviously going to be coming back again, hopefully very soon. But you would lend that USDC to a protocol kind of like Aave or like on Arjuna, you'd lend it against a pool of collateral that you're comfortable with. So obviously with Aave, you've got, say, like Gauntlet doing the kind of risk management behind the scenes. So it's, they're like saying, hey, this is the basket of collateral that we think is a safe bet for you to lend any of these assets against, say USDC. Like we're taking on the risk management with supply caps and the rates and so on. Arjuna is more like you are the risk manager. So you choose the pool that you want to lend against. You also choose the lending price you want to lend against. So I'm only happy to lend up to 80% LTV, but you might want to lend up to 99% LTV. If you want to do your own risk management, on your own personal risk tolerance, and how happy you would be on taking the other side of the pool. So if the price in the market exceeds your lending price or drops below your lending price, then depending actually if you're long or short, but if it exceeds your lending price, then you automatically get the other side of the pool in tokens. So if you're lending against ETH and the price of ETH is, I'm trying to get my head around it now, which way around it works, but if it keeps dropping, you would end up holding the ETH. And then if the price climbs again, it would swap back to USDC almost in a limit order style way. So that's the simplest kind of ways. And then there's other ways you can go and make money as well. There's different pools and different strategies to maximize your thing. So you could swap like your USDC and deposit it into the like savings DAI USDC pool to be able to earn the kind of the yield of savings DAI and multiply that exposure up. So you could take, say, 10x exposure to SDAI USDC. So if there's a, say, a 1% difference in the USDC borrowing rate, again, and the SDAI yield, which is, say, 5%, you could 10x that 1%. So earn 10x on it. So earn 10% basically on your USDC by depositing it into that strategy instead of just, say, 5% if you swapped it to savings DAI. But that's maybe, on one hand, it's a slightly riskier strategy because if the borrow rate exceeds the yield rate of savings DAI, then you very quickly lose money if you're not careful. Where on the other side, on the lending pool, you really only should be making money. And the worst case is you end up with the token on the other side. So you just need to do your risk tolerance on the tokens there. But so it's really down to you as a user, which, like, what your risk tolerance is and what you would like to do.
No, that makes sense. That's fairly straightforward. How have you, like, what has been the most successful method for you when it has come to customer acquisition for Oasis or for Summer?
So I think the thing that's really stood out for us, and really it's the thing that is our USP more than anything else, is focusing on the UX. I think if you look across almost like 95% of crypto, the UX is a thing that's been completely secondary and almost forgotten about. Like we're very, particularly when you look at 2018, 2019, 2020, the industry was extremely tech heavy. It still is extremely tech heavy.
Yeah.
And the same sort of thing.
Full of jargon heavy. Really.
Yeah. Jargon and like kind of approvals and signature signing and so on. And just boxes where you just click next or you click it and you don't really know what's going on and hidden away values. So if you're making a loss, it's hidden away from you as a user.
Yes.
The costs 100%. Are hidden away from you and so on. Hey, this is going to introduce a price impact of X. Are you sure you want to do this trade? All those sorts of things hidden away. Like the one thing we often play with and get a lot of feedback on, positive and negative, is we introduced basically the cost that you've spent on gas, managing your positions into kind of your net profit and loss. So basically saying, hey, this is actually like your true profit and loss on this position. Like you're actually making a loss because you adjust your position so many times on the expensive like mainnet L1 that you've actually spent more on gas than you've ever earned.
Yeah.
And we have some users where they say, I don't care about gas. Don't show me that. I want to see how much this position is earning me. And then others are like, this is so helpful. I cannot believe I've spent like over $10,000 on gas managing this position. But it's that UX that I think brings a lot of people to the platform to use it, because you could use a protocol front end with very limited functionality. But it's about, okay, displaying all the information, displaying accurate information, truthful information, and then reducing the number of clicks it takes to do anything. So we have our multiplier, our earn strategies product, for example. If you went to Aave on the protocol front end to try and get like a 3x ETH USDC position, it would take you probably 10 to 12 transactions by depositing into Aave, withdrawing the USDC, going to say Uniswap or 1inch, swapping that USDC back to ETH, going back to Aave, depositing the ETH and so on, where we do all that for you in one transaction. So you would just choose how much ETH you want to deposit, choose your multiple, or ultimately how much debt you want to take from that, like kind of the LTV where it's going to do the recursive functions. And if it's ETH, you sign one transaction and it just does it and it puts the position into the state for you that you ultimately want, that would typically before take you maybe 10 to 12 transactions and two or three different websites to do in one transaction, one click. And that's that really, if we talk about like for us, like we use the jobs to be done framework. So as a user, if that's the job they want to do, then our job is to make the tools that make that as easy as possible. So that's how we look at it. And that's our acquisition strategy in that sense as well. Like we try and build the best possible products. Distribution is always a challenge in crypto, particularly in this market.
Absolutely.
Where like users are disappearing and the likes of Google and so on don't allow you to promote, and Twitter don't allow you to promote DeFi products because of the lack of regulation, which I understand on one side, but it makes it incredibly difficult to break out basically. And unfortunately, you just get constantly competing with the fraudulent websites that are maybe doing sponsored ads for 3 or 4 days, but it only takes 3 or 4 days to grab those couple of users that their results suddenly appear at the top, or their things suddenly appear on Twitter offering 200% APY, and then the users get rugged a day later.
Yes.
That's the battle. So for us, it's the same as every company or every founder or every product would say, build the best products and the users will come. Like we know it, that doesn't exist, where you build it and users come. So you have to keep working and keep trying, but you do still have to have the best products, in my opinion. For us, that's exactly what we're working towards. And the best is like security, trust, UX, and the tool to get that job done. So understanding what the users really want to do in DeFi. Because there's a ton of products out there in crypto that don't actually do anything.
Yeah. Oh, that has been like one of my key criticisms of Web3, is that a lot of the problems that Web3 solves are Web3 created itself. So we want to solve real problems, and borrowing and lending and all that are real world problems that I feel like DeFi can solve very easily. However, as you said, that UX has been a big challenge for any normal new user to come in the space. If we want new people to come in the space, we have to make it super simple, super easy, and all that. So having said that, what is your vision for Summer.fi? How do you see it going ahead in 2 years' time or 3 years' time? Where would you like it to be?
Yeah, so I think it's still what the one-liner says at the moment, is the best place to borrow and earn. In DeFi, I think in kind of 3 to 5 years, really what I hope is that like our products and our strategies or whatever are used to help many more ordinary people access kind of the yield and the kind of safe yield that's available in DeFi. Like I think the focus really is going to be on earning. So earning a yield for normal people, I think you just alluded to it a second ago when you said like maybe borrowing and lending solves real world problems. I think it solves real world problems for like crypto OGs and crypto natives in particular, particularly ones that got in early to ETH and BTC and so on. But borrowing and that kind of multiplying, like multiplied trading and so on, is only ever going to be a kind of niche product for a smaller group of users. However, the earn product I see as being something out there is the potential to be much, much bigger. And the hope is that we can plug a lot of our strategies into kind of the maybe the Web2 fintech apps that we've got today, from the non-custodial nature of it and so on, like reducing the middle people, obviously, which was what crypto and DeFi was all about, like moving the kind of four or five steps in the middle that need to be there. And,
can you give an example of those?
So let's say you've got like Revolut is always one that's like really good at like pushing partnerships and putting things in for their users. They adopted crypto very early on and they've got their crypto wallet in there, although it's it's not non-custodial in that sense and so on. But what we see as a great opportunity is creating some sort of like SDK or something for them to easily be able to create a wallet for their users underneath at kind of one click, transfer their money into that wallet, like all kind of functionality hidden away, and just having a number of different strategies. So for us long term, it'll be like, hey, here's a GBP strategy, here's a Euro strategy, here's a USD strategy. Yeah. The current yield on, say, the Revolut app, super easy, 5% deposit. As a user, you just claim, yes, I'll take that, just like you do have a savings account at a bank, right? It says, hey, would you like this 2%? Now, another bank is probably earning 3 or 4% on that, and they're giving you 2%. But in DeFi, we don't need to have all of those kind of steps where it's being taken away. So let's say an app like Revolut can offer the 5% and they can just deploy that capital through a kind of very safe, secure, non-custodial strategy. And what I mean by that really is the fact that once the user deposits it into it, nobody else can touch it or change it or anything like that. The only thing that might happen is there might be a set rule set written into the code where it's like that deposit is automatically rebalanced, but only by the kind of the protocols and the pools that are set when the user deposits into it. So it's entirely non-custodial. It should be non-upgradable in that sense. So the users can't have their money stolen or taken away. And I think that's hugely scalable. And we can scale that up massively to also institutions as well. So like pension funds or whatever, if they want to put just 1% of their portfolio into, say, a DeFi strategy or so on, make it incredibly easy just to deposit into a USD pot or like, let's say, a kind of a blue chip, almost like a blue chip DeFi ETF in some senses, right? Where you have your ETF and you have like emerging market equities or you have developed market equities for a different risk level and so on. If you only want to lend to, say, Wrapped BTC, ETH and other USD stables, then this is a strategy for you. Or you can go and lend into protocols which are newer, that offer bigger yields, but there's a chance you lose everything. Yes. I think the one thing really blocking adoption, though, is obviously the regulation and KYC side of things. And the one thing I've heard a lot or quite a lot this year, it's all about this kind of idea of decentralized identities and like ZK identities. So if you can go to somewhere like Sama, confer and just have a signature that proves like you are not a citizen of this country or you're a citizen of this country and you're not on any AML or KYC like negative lists or something like that, like, you are free to use it, but we don't need to know anything about you. Like, here's your wallet. Your wallet's got a ZK signature that just proves that you are okay to use this product and you can go off and use that product. And I think that's the thing that's going to hold us back to like adoption on say like Revolut apps and all those sort of fintechs that their legal and compliance teams are going to want to know that like they're not mixing their user funds with like kind of funds it shouldn't be mixed with. And obviously we've got the privacy pools thing from Amin and so on recently and stuff that also could help with that possibly.
Oh, that makes so much sense. I was about to say, it sounds like a zero knowledge proof can solve that. And that's when you mentioned that the wallet has a ZK signature or something like that. Then they can prove who they are without revealing their identity in a way. So I think that's
right.
That is something going to be big. It solves a real world problem to me.
Yeah,
that like even Web2 products use AML KYC. So many financial products in TradFi or traditional finance, you still use AML KYC. So zero knowledge could be used in that as well, theoretically anyway. I don't know, regulation will allow it or not, but theoretically it could be done.
Yeah. It'd be a good challenge to the lawmakers and stuff, right? Because there is no reason for us to send copies of our passport to hundreds of companies like in our lifetime. It's probably thousands of companies, right? And it's
I know.
So if there's no reason, it's why are they pushing it? And there must be an ulterior motive underneath if like they're requiring that. If the true reason is just to protect users and protect users from like loss or mixing their funds with the Lazarus group or anything like that, then and the ZK thing solves it massively. But we know how difficult it is to change those things. And I think the biggest difficulty is there are many companies that are making a lot of money through providing and holding all of this AML data.
I know. You're talking about
another
email.
Fintech revolution.
I know. I don't even like giving my email address to like hundreds of, which I've done, thousands of companies. And so many of them get hacked all the time. It's like my health insurance was in New Zealand like a year ago or something. And after that, I started getting all this spam messages on my phone and on my email because they had my phone number and email. And this started.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I completely agree with you that we should not be giving. It should be fairly easy to prove who you are without having to give all the personal information. We have the technology, theoretically, just not accepted, adopted everywhere. So yeah, apart from this, like, what's your most non-contrarian view when you think about crypto and blockchain and all this whole ecosystem?
I think it's similar to what we just talked about, right? Like, there's always this issue, I think, where we talk about what real world problems does crypto really solve for? And like DeFi, like, it makes me sad that like making money is the thing that we've managed to find as the key problem that DeFi kind of almost helps solve for, because it started out, I think, as like kind of banking the unbanked. Obviously, the costs of then when it gets adopted, like the cost of that became almost unreal. Like that's coming back with L2s and so on. But there are starting to be things, say, like the zero knowledge proof of key identities and so on. That is a real world problem that is applicable throughout. You have to send this stuff to your lawyer or your accountant, like when you like buying a house or something, right? This is all stuff that could be. Like, this is a real problem that isn't just almost serving the same kind of 10 or 20% that the old financial system served anyway.
Yeah.
Like, the real people, I think, that had the most to gain from it. I still think it's being used heavily. Like, you speak to people in Argentina and so on and things like that. Yes. And adoption of crypto is huge. But it still makes me sad that the thing we're solving for most is helping. And in most cases, it's people with the most money able to make the most money. Like when we look at airdrops and yield farming and stuff like that, like we haven't solved the fact that if the more money you've got, the more money you're going to make. And the little people at the bottom, the ones that need it most, are the ones that are not gaining from it the most, which is completely anti the kind of, for me, like the libertarian kind of view of 2015, 2016, 2017 crypto. Really, like anyone can hold Bitcoin, like that, those early days, right? Anybody can hold Bitcoin. Anybody can use Bitcoin. Like, you generally just need a phone back in the kind of early days in particular to spend it in shops and so on. But
I have a spicy take on that. Doesn't libertarianism always result in massively unequal society? Because then doesn't it become like it's the strongest always wins without any guidance?
Yeah, I think it's not the first time. It's not the first time. Like, this is like,
because that's
like a circle,
why,
and it keeps happening.
Yeah, like, that's why we have like taxation. In theory, it's supposed to be for the distribution of wealth from the. Yeah. So the more you earn, the more tax you pay. But libertarianism means the purest form of libertarianism means no taxation. It's every man for himself. And that's what it is. Yeah. And in that scenario, the strongest always ends up accumulating all the resources and all the wealth. That's what does happen. And that's why you see things like Bitcoin, they are highly unequal. Like how much Bitcoin is controlled by the top 1% of the wallets. It is a lot less egalitarian than the traditional financial ecosystem. However, on the other end of the spectrum, we did bank the unbanked, and who were the real unbanked that crypto banked? And it was in tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions. And those were the gamers under the age of 18. So 12 to 18 year olds gamers, this crypto was their first experience because they weren't like, they didn't have any bank account, like gamers in Philippines and Vietnam and like whole of Asia in Africa. This is their first wallet. They are crypto natives. So this is their first source of income in most cases and first experience with an independent form of money that they earned on their own that they could spend. And so I think those were the real unbanked that crypto banked.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some success stories. And I think if you look at 2018, like there was a lot of success stories. I think things like DAI was huge in Argentina. I think at one point it was something like 20% of all DAI was being used in Argentina or something crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy like that. Like it just became like, it was just then when the cost of transactions went up in a way and you almost had to move to centralized services because the cheap blockchains didn't exist back then. And when they did, they were almost scammy in some senses and they took a while to get going. Now we have it. Now we have like the cheap ones of Solana and so on and your L2s. And so on that are there. And I think there's an opportunity still in the future to bank the unbanked, but there's always going to be this space. And it's one kind of end up in myself in this within Summer and stuff, where you're catering to, well, we want the users of AK Plus and so on, primarily because it's also really hard as a company to monetize retail users.
It is extremely
Not difficult. You can monetize them, but the amount you need to make break even is, it's so hard to break even when you look at the customer support teams and stuff you need to service them.
And that's the thing with decentralization, like pure decentralization, there is no customer service in decentralization. If you are just sending peer-to-peer Bitcoin, you enter wrong address, who do you go to? You can't call anyone. So that is a challenge. Not that I have an answer for that, but whoever solves the problem of customer service in decentralization, they are going to win. Like customer service is just a UX UI issue. I don't know, user experience issue. And that's why user experience is poor in decentralized products.
Yeah, I think in the early days, when I look at Maker and so on, customer service was the reason they almost, for me, it feels like one of the reasons why you need a token, because you create a community and that community is incentivized on helping the users use your product. So if you have a community of token holders, like the shareholders should be selling their own products of the things that they have, like the token holders should be helping their own users use their product and make it the best product possible to sell it further. Because even this idea of like true decentralization, there's nobody like building the product or working on the product, right? They are just community members hoping to get a return from somewhere. And customer support should be almost exactly the same for that. So for us, we're basically community members of Maker, Aave, Arjuna, and so on. Like we're nothing more than community members in their eyes. And we're doing our best to help them use those different products. And if we can help them use those products, then we also benefit as well. That's like when we're helping someone with Summer, we're actually very rarely helping anyone with our app, because our app doesn't really do anything apart from help them use the underlying protocols.
Yes.
And really we're a customer support line for those protocols.
That's amazing.
In that sense. And yeah. And hopefully the more people that provide that customer support helps that protocol grow and the underlying token holders then benefit and so on. So
yeah.
Which is why I think you see so many grants being given out by all these protocols, because they know they need kind of community teams to go and do the grunt work in a way of these products.
And that's why crypto winter is hard, because a lot of the grants dry up, and that's why community leaves, disbands, Discord and Telegram groups go quiet.
Oh, yeah.
Like Discord servers, and because no one's contributing, no one's there. I don't
know.
There's no
users to serve, right? Like there's few users asking questions. There's few users like trying to get in for the first time that need help.
Yes.
Yeah. And all those ones that we just talked about, like the token values, like they're there to help. Like they want to help to be able to inflate and promote the token value. And like the token values are going down. We've stabilized a little bit this year, really. But like last year, it was brutal, right? Ever since kind of mid-2021, November 21, like it's been brutal.
Yeah,
and there's no way to deny that unless you're out there shorting everything secretly. Like we know a lot of the crypto community isn't doing that, and you just look at how quiet crypto Twitter is these days. It's the same
is
a
it?
Year and a half ago. You could take you hours to get through to the previous day.
It's
about three
crazy
scrolls, and you're onto yesterday's
but
post.
Is it just crypto Twitter quiet, or is just Twitter is quiet overall? I don't know. I don't really know, because I don't spend much time on Twitter. I have no time to spend, but I don't know. What's your opinion on that?
I don't spend a huge time on it. I'm not the biggest Twitter engager, really, but I don't think it's not just people on Twitter. It's the whole market, and I think it's also, I think, fairly not the whole global economy, but it isn't just crypto that's down and struggling. There's Web2 companies letting people go left the first half this year and last year. It's just a difficult time globally with inflation and so on, I think, and people's spare money struggling. And with that, crypto is still to most people.
Yes.
And it's something they use their spare money in. There's obviously a group where it's their livelihoods and the people working for DAOs and so on and within it. But when we talk about users, like you go to a conference now, and how many people are there that are users of a protocol that don't work for a protocol? It's very low. And with everybody you speak to now, you go to a lot of, particularly the ETH conferences, I work for X in crypto, I work for Y in crypto.
Well, everyone works. Like, it's all. So if you go to ETH Global or a hackathon or any of those, every person there works for a Web3 or a crypto or a blockchain or something, works in the industry pretty much. It's not new people coming in for the first time. That has stopped. I haven't seen that.
It stopped, yeah. But even, I think, ETH Denver in 2019, like I remember there being like loads of users there, like people that were generally like interested, like the collecting the swag and stuff, and they were they were users of these protocols. Like they were governance users, they were like MKR token holders, because when I was there like with Maker and so on, and they were DAI users and stuff, and wanted to know what was happening with DAI or when MCD was coming and so on. But yeah, now it's just, who do you work for? Like in the space, and it's a real sad reality. Remember, we've just got to push through it, I think.
Yes. So I just got back yesterday from Token 2049. I was surprised. It was so busy. It was insane. It's 290 plus side events. And some of those side events were like full-on conferences in their own right. Like full-day things and multiple talks and panels and all sorts. And 290 or more, or some say it was even up to 400 of those like side events. It was insanely busy. It was more than... Like, I went to ETH Denver as well, and you got, like, a whole spreadsheet of, like, really long events. This was next level. This was, like, 2-3 times longer than the ETH Denver side events. I can't go to everyone, so I can't tell for everyone, but there was a lot of capital there as well, like VCs and everyone looking for the next, from next killer app to the next big team to fund, but still, everyone is scared, not deploying capital. The story is the same. And everyone I've met worked in the industry. So there weren't any new people. 2 years ago, if you go to LA or Blockchain Summit or something like that, or NFT LA, there were so many people from the general public that were interested in metaverse and NFTs and gaming and all sorts of things, looking, trying to enter the space. But there was no new people trying to enter here. Either you owned an agency, you worked for a fund, you worked in DeFi, you are a market maker, you're a liquidity pro, all sorts of people, like, but from the industry and founders, of course, a lot of founders and developers wanting to change their job or whatever. So very interesting.
Yeah. We've always been very good in crypto of putting on conferences and attending conferences, right? Like it's thingies, but I think you touched on it then. I think the NFTs, like they got a lot of stick around the utility and so on, but NFTs were huge in crypto summer.
Yes.
For bringing ordinary people into the space and wanting to buy. We saw like lots of celebrities buying like NFTs, whether it was like the punks or the kind of the Bored Apes and so on. Like it brought so many ordinary people in, and okay, they didn't always have the best reputation, but like they put on events and stuff. Like there was a Bored Apes like parties and so on, and they were the users. They were users of, well, like the holders of the NFTs and stuff, but they were users. They were using crypto. They had to buy it with something, and they had to buy it with generally like ETH or DAI or USDC or something. And they're all the ones that we've lost again now. And again, unfortunately, they've like many lost a lot of money. And that's the difficult thing. And you wonder like, how are we going to get those back maybe as well?
So that's what everyone is looking for, is the next killer app. NFT was one of that. In my opinion, stablecoin is another one of those sort of things. But I don't know what will be the next. All these things exist already. What will be the next thing? Do you have any idea what would be the next big killer app in this?
Well, I don't know. I think when we talked before, the killer apps before, like in really the last couple of years with the 10 or 100x gains, like the NFTs and so on, like you could buy the floor NFT at one ETH and sell it for 100 ETH and so on. I generally believe like with huge kind of peaks and troughs and stuff, and that almost just needs to settle. And I think really the killer app is just the kind of steady, safe yields that are going to exceed bank yields and so on, because you remove all of the middle people from it and so on. So if we can get to a space where in DeFi, for an extremely low chance of being rugged or losing your money, you can just keep steadily earning 6-8% or whatever, bring more real world assets on chain, earn from those. It isn't the thing that's going to, that's the hockey stick, long-term hockey stick growth, in my opinion, as opposed to the grow 100x, lose 99x, grow 100x, lose 99x. And that's what we did. We did that in 2017, where we shot up
ICO,
Bitcoin
boom,
and so on was shutting up, and then it all came crashing down and stuff. And then we,
I don't know if you remember that.
Again in
ICO boom.
Yeah, yeah.
2017.
I mean, that's how
that's
we all got into crypto myself, like the first time and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we did it. But like on every single one of these waves, more and more people like are losing, that have lost, like ordinary people have lost money. Yes. Like almost like the classic rule, isn't it? Like when your dentist tells you to get in, like you get out, right?
Yeah.
Like that kind of, that's the peak, that's the bubble. And like the real adoption is going to be the products that don't create the bubble, but they just create sticky adoption. So like the same as the fintech apps have done really now, like the kind of like in the UK, like the Monzos, the Revoluts globally and so on, the digital wealth managers that kind of cut wealth management fees in half, basically by taking everything online and remove the kind of in-person meetings. Like they produced a sticky product, had lower fees, offered better returns because they infused technology into their systems, and like
pretty much they moved everyone to and stuck. Yeah, yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, stuff grew, yeah. and
that gave steady returns, as you say. They beat the general bank interest rate, and they gave the steady returns, and so ETFs have won pretty much everyone. That's the general advice, that you cannot stock pick, you cannot crypto pick, just go for an ETFs, and you'll be fine, like S&P 500 or something like that in the stocks in the Web2 world. That's the general advice. I agree with that. And I don't think the bank interest rates will remain this high forever. They never have. Eventually, they do come down, the bank interest rates. And that's when the interest rates in crypto, in DeFi, would be a lot more attractive. Because right now, interest rate in the bank is quite high, but that will change. It always has. It always goes up and down. So that's what I believe. Just go ahead.
And ultimately, wage growth versus inflation, right? I think that's the thing that's killed everybody. Metaphorically, it's the fact that inflation has been greater than wage growth in the last kind of 18 months or so.
Yeah.
So, which obviously directly ties to the bank rates. So bank rates will come down once wage growth is almost higher than inflation, as long as inflation is under control. But yeah, it's just taking everybody's like spare change in a way that would normally have gone maybe into crypto. Oh, I put £100 into ETH every month or something like that. Like, that's the thing that everyone has like probably cancelled and done. And I think there was like, DEX volumes are all-time low. Centralized exchange volumes apparently are on all-time low at the moment, at least something I saw on Twitter recently. But yeah, so like I said, once those bank rates come down and so on, and you can offer a steady, consistent yield, then because if you go and ask 100 people on the street like what they would really want, only one in 100 is probably looking for that 100x return. They would all take the 100x if you could guarantee it, and nobody can guarantee that. But no one, probably one in 100 is actually going to take the risk of going after that. And that's the sort of products we're building in crypto today. Like, we're trying to build the find the 100x. Like, every VC and fund was throwing money into every project back in 2021. Like,
everything's
going to be the 100x.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's the most boring products that are the most sticky sometimes. And it isn't always the most exciting. But the underlying technology is there to create very sticky products.
Yeah, but I remember. Even the 2021 interesting products didn't look that interesting. OpenSea didn't look interesting in 2019. It looked like a boring product. It only got interesting later on. And so did all the biggest ones, all the biggest names of 2021 in this space. They looked boring initially, and that's fine. It's just when it's the frenzy or like the hype or the boom, everything looks interesting. And that's why everyone was throwing money at every next project and stuff. So yeah. But that's...
Yeah. Well, FOMO, right? Like, you just... didn't want to miss out, like, because the UX and stuff was so bad with these products and stuff. You couldn't really, I think in fintech, you almost could look at the UX and understand what the product was and how good the product was underneath in fintech, right? To understand if it was good investment or bad. Like, it was very, very rare that you saw investment in fintech on a product that had bad UX.
Yes.
And in crypto, the UX was so bad across the board that it was almost like that shield had gone in a way, I think. And I myself, you look at products like, how is that raised at like a seed round at 500 million valuation or whatever? And like, their website looks like that.
I don't know.
That's the world we lived in.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we had the AI frenzy, but that's also coming to an end. It seems like the whole AI boom, pretty much everyone had like a thin application layer on top of using APIs from OpenAI, Anthropic or somewhere. Or using an open source model and getting crazy 100 million valuation rounds.
It's all waves, isn't it? These things, like they come and they're like super hyped up. They're across all of the media. There's like government like sessions saying, is AI going to take over the world? And you're putting AI out there all over the place. And the new stories run out, like almost the new innovative like things dry up a little bit, like all of the like 10 things you can do with AI.
Yeah,
and that's the same happens with crypto, right? Like we almost built everything we could at the time, and got really excited, and everybody was using everything, and every token was going up, and the reality sinks in.
Yeah, if you look at the top 10 from 2017, there was Bitcoin and Ethereum, the top two. They still have stuck around, apart from Ripple, which kind of has been static because of all the legal issues. No other, I think they're all different now.
They definitely.
The seven.
Cardano was in there three or four for a while, right? Where Cardano and was going to be the next big thing in 2017, right? That was the scientifically proven one or whatever.
And yeah, that I think was the EOS
was in there for a bit.
Yeah, there was EOS, and then there was Tron, and then there's all these ones that we don't see anymore now as much. So I think the next one would look very different as well. Is there any particular project you are really bullish on apart from your own project?
I'm pretty bullish across like kind of DeFi generally, or at least the kind of like the ones that are the real use cases and stuff, like the ones that aren't just being pumped up by their tokens and so on. But yeah, we integrated Arjuna recently, and obviously we unfortunately had to like disable, Arjuna disabled it, or we just had to disable it really because of a small bug and stuff in it, and that will be redeployed soon. But that was the completely permissionless, governanceless, oracle-less protocol. So it was, it didn't have, there was no governance controlling everything. It was completely permissionless. So any pool could be created. And it was completely, and it was oracle-less as well. So we didn't have any oracles. We talked, had a lot of conversations beforehand on different like kind of Twitter spaces and so on around this idea of maybe it's bring your own oracle, because as a user, you need to understand what the price is. But that means you can bring in the oracle, like you can trust, you can bring in the price feed that you trust in some senses. But for us, that was like almost the next step in a way of development, removing more kind of middle people in a sense, like removing the kind of oracles, the chain links and so on, the kind of the key failure points that if anything's going to happen. You look at so many protocols over the last couple of years that have been wrecked or economically attacked because an oracle was manipulated in some way, and you take all of that away and you leave it as like this like kind of bare bones protocol that you let which the market ultimately decides the rates and so on. And it was only running for 7 or 8 weeks, good and bad in a way, but like it just started to like settle and find its rates, and it was growing nicely. So it's those kind of protocols. I think we've got like the likes of Morpho and stuff that are doing some really cool things. Like they've really shaken the stuff up with like on top of like Compound and Aave and stuff. And yeah, they're doing some really cool things. But yeah, I think it's, and then it's the products, I think like backed finance that are bringing the real world assets on chain. I know there's a number of them as well. And
there's so many
of their names and so on.
Yeah,
but
it was full of exciting RW like real world assets or projects trying to bring real world assets onto blockchain and stuff. But yeah, hopefully we'll see another wave of new projects and new people in the space. So but
that's, hopefully users, right? Like this.
Hopefully users. Yes. Yes. It does sometimes feel like we have more projects than users in the space.
It does after such a long bear market, doesn't it? Yeah. Like, I think we had the same feelings 2018, 2019. I think going into 2019, it feels like the same people around then are the ones that are still here now, primarily. But it was, the same feelings, same users in the Discord, the same users in the forums, the same people on Twitter. Yeah. And you're just like, where's the new ones coming? But yeah, like as long as we stick around, they're going to come back. If we keep building the products that solve problems for them.
Yeah. No, that sounds excellent. So what do you need to take Summer.fi to the next stage or Summer Finance to the next stage? Do you have an ask? Are you looking to hire, to raise capital? Anything, feel free to share.
Yeah, I think for us, it's just like people are using DeFi, like keep using, it's more of a DeFi thing, right? Keep using DeFi and tell your friends about DeFi and come to Summer to use it and so on. But there are still like good yields, there are still good products out there. Like DeFi doesn't need to be about like constant speculation.
Yeah.
So it's like try and use DeFi without the speculation at times and see if it's more enjoyable and feels better when you don't lose
80%
money. And I say that as someone that's lost like 80% of their own own money in it. This is almost advice to myself, right?
Yeah.
Like, ditch the 10x speculation hope. Yeah. But FOMO kicks in again, right? But as an industry, we need to build the sticky products. And the sticky products are ones that can survive the bull and bear markets. Like we can't just build for bull markets. And we've made that mistake twice now, I think.
Yes. And that's or probably more in, time. Right? Yeah. I remember the 2015 and the 2013 or something, and just things. It feels like it's a 3-year cycle. Like it seems like I could be wrong, but just like the regular stock market has 8 to 11 year cycle, crypto seems to have 3 year. Also because it moves 3 times faster, it doesn't sleep like the 9 to 4 or 5 or 10 to 4 or something. 10 a.m.
Yeah, yeah, totally, yeah.
It doesn't have that. It doesn't. It's not shut on the weekends. Sorry, no Bitcoin for the weekends. It runs
trading stopped.
Trading stopped. Yeah, come back on Monday. It's a Labor Day, so I come back on Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Crypto never sleeps.
Crypto never sleeps. So, and it's so decentralized. Every single founder I've met has team all around the world. It seems like we have all in Web3 and crypto and blockchain really adopted this decentralized ethos right to the core. A lot of them don't even have a physical office and a building. And just like Bitcoin doesn't have an office and a building somewhere headquartered in Geneva or something. It's not like that. So it's, and so people have, and this allows us to access the best developers from anywhere in the world, because we are not limited to the 50 kilometer or 50 mile radius in our city for only the talent in that space. So I think that's why.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I have high hopes for crypto and blockchain and Web3 because of these reasons.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like 100%. I was going to say the same thing, and you took the words out of my mouth. We do have some of the best developers in the world.
Yeah,
working on these projects, and some of the brightest minds. Like, it's still crazy how many of them are under like 25.
Yes.
And like I always feel like a granddad at times and stuff from like some of the conferences and so on. But there's such bright youngest minds. And yeah, we just gotta. Again, what I said before, we got to keep building the tools that solve problems and actually understand what the real problems are as well. That's where all of the best internet like kind of companies have made all their money, like the Googles and the Amazons and so on. Like, they've solved actual problems for users. Even if their users didn't know that they were problems, they've solved actual problems. And we've got the talent to solve real world like problems and so on, and solve actual user problems. We maybe need more people in the space, like user researchers and so on within crypto to actually understand what those problems are. Like, going to shout out like Jordan and our team, who's our user researcher, just like spends day and night talking about like jobs to be done and like the products, and like shares like user interviews in our channels or clips and stuff like that constantly. We need to solve this problem. Like, this is like the fourth time this week this has been mentioned or something like that. Like, that's what Web2 is full of. And the best Web2 companies and products have these user researchers, have these people constantly speaking to users. And speaking to users isn't just like earn 100% yield for 2 weeks on a random Discord server, right? It's actually listening to them and understanding what is it they want to be able to do, and what, like, how they get jobs done without this product.
Exactly.
And that's how we're going to solve the best. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Do you use your own product?
I do, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, very much so.
Because I have seen so many times founders who don't even use their own product.
Actually, we've got our offsite coming up soon, and we've actually got a whole session around questioning our own people, like, who uses the product here, and doing a classic kind of game of who uses it. If you don't, why not? And how much of your wealth is in it? And do you use others? Do you use competitive products? If you don't use ours, do you use competitors? And if you do, why? But I'm with you. You've got a little bit like we talked before about the shareholders sell, they've got to sell their own products. Your community members have got to sell your own product.
Yeah.
If you're 100%. Working, if you're not using the own product that you're helping to build, like, something's desperately wrong there. But and that's the same, not just crypto, but that's the same for any product that you work on. If you're able to use it, like, obviously if some of those people are building products for like institutions or something, it's a little bit more difficult. But if you're building a product you can use, you've got to use it. And I think sometimes the same way as even when you're interviewing someone, like for me, like particularly like product people in particular, like if you're interviewing a product person and they've never used your products by that first interview, that's it. Like, not the right person. Like, you might be like a really good product person, but if you haven't even taken the time to use the product or try it out before an interview, if you come in and say, oh, what's the one thing you would want to change on the product? And they say, oh, I've not used it. And you're meant to be a product person or even like an end engineer or something like that. That for me is going to, that's again, not just for crypto and stuff, but
Web2.
Yeah. I think, and I think almost all of the investors we have, I think every single one actually had used the product. So when we spoke to them and stuff and like sent them pitch decks or whatever, like, they already knew the product. They knew the company. They knew the product. They knew what we did.
Yes.
And it wasn't a question mark. And they're the ones that add the most value as well. Because when we reach out to them or we speak to them or whatever, like, they're users of the product. So they can give you real feedback and real kind of annoyances or things that frustrate them that are valuable, as opposed to, I think quite typically, like, experience in Web2 was like Web2 investors like invested and then sat back and gave you just boilerplate things that you should be thinking about or doing or using or something like that. But it's, for a B2C company in particular, you've got to find people that use your product and then they can sell the product for you.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
Right?
So how did you, I've got just one or two more questions because I'm really enjoying talking with you. How did you connect with your investors? How did you pitch them? As in, were they introduced to you by someone? Did you do cold outreach, something else? Feel free to share.
They were all introduced to us through other connections we had and so on back in like the kind of the Maker days or whatever.
Yeah.
So one of the people that advises us had a very good kind of black book in a way, and just introduced us to ones that he thought would also be the most applicable. And unfortunately for us, it was Like, it was quite a short list, and we found the ones we wanted as well fairly quickly. It was the classic, like, it took a lot of pitches and quite a lot of no's and stuff from someone. But once we've spoken to some of the ones that we liked, and again, the ones that had used the product and were still using the product and actually had some real awesome use cases around, like, what they do with the products and so on, I was like, okay, these are the, like, the most helpful, right? Like, the money is obviously super helpful, but actually their input and their knowledge and so on is just second to none. And we, like, speak to, like, several of the top ones on Telegram every week and get, like, feedback or whatever, or have you considered this, or they send us new protocols or introductions to, like, I think this could be great for you guys. So yeah, they're like, yeah, like, it's, I think it could be quite easy in 2021, particularly just to take the highest bidder in some senses as well. But for us, like, we knew how much we wanted to raise, and we got some, I think for us, like, some of the best investors, and maybe didn't realize it at the time as well, that they, like, how useful they would be. But yeah, incredibly useful, particularly when the markets are going down. That's the important thing. Like, everyone can be useful when the markets are going up, because almost any bit of advice is good advice in some senses. But I think the best advice comes out when it's, or like, the best advice shines through when the markets are going in the wrong direction and the users are dropping off and so on, that there's not really anything you can do about it, because it's an industry issue, not a product issue. Like, you just have to beat the market. Like, you have to be better than the market average. So if the market average TVO is down 10% and you're only down 5%, then you're winning. That's, you're going to readjust your KPIs to be a realistic measure. But yeah, the advice,
I think,
that
that's
they
when the real
feedback they have.
Yeah, the real character of the investment firm or the investor shines is in the down market. I feel like that, can they support you during that as well? Just like how they support you during the good times, because that's when the support is really needed in the tough times. So I think that is such a good benchmark for any VC, for any investor. So yeah, so that's...
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, everyone can give advice when the markets are going up, and, well, we don't necessarily need it. Again, you've still got the KPI of, you've got to beat the market. If you're really performing, like, you've got to be beating the market averages and so on. But yeah, everyone's got good advice. Just like everyone can pick a good stock or good token when everything's going up. Like, no one's picking a bad stock, right?
Yeah, and people feel so smart of doing that. It's the market, right? It's not you. It's just, well, I bought a house in 1979 in downtown London. That's what you should have done. Isn't this? That's just because I was smart and I worked hard and I bought it for £37,000 or something
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm hosting a Twitter space. Ask me anything.
Yeah. Ask me anything. Right? Have I built a $20 million portfolio? Because But then,
I think maybe even inherited it, right? Like,
exactly.
But yeah, when the market's going up, like, crypto Twitter is full of financial advisors and stuff, right?
And all that, like, same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Startup gurus and things like that. But like, every, like, how I raised 20 million or whatever. But yeah, the key ones are the ones that are still, like, talking about that and, like, talking about, like, how they've helped keep their company going through a bear market or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're very few and far between, unfortunately, because those ones that are not, that are making, like, getting their companies through and not spending their days on Twitter primarily pumping loads of stuff, they're building and thinking stuff as well. But
one very important or cool saying is that if someone is selling a course on how to get rich, then you should not be buying that, because anyone real would be using that information for themselves. They wouldn't need to sell that course to survive.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's just, and that's something that I made the decision that I don't ask any guests on my podcast, hey, what's this token price going to be, or what, even if they have their own, you know, token, or if they have their own project and their own, I never, because it's not about, I don't know, it's building a good product. It's what it's all about. It's the token and all those things are just secondary. That's what I believe.
Yeah. If you build a good product and the users come and crucially find a way to monetize it, your token or your share equity or whatever, because not exactly that different, but will go up.
100%.
But if you're just focusing on, like, almost economics of the token
or the technicals
before building a good product.
Yeah, or the technicals and just looking at the graph of what's going up and down and all that. So that's why I never talk about that, even though that's what people want generally. They just want alpha, pretty much. People just want alpha, and the real alpha is build a good product.
Yeah. And again, that's why I come back to, like, we're still in that space where we're just searching for the 10 or 100x, I want the 10, 100x alpha or whatever. And the true, like, the mainstream adoption is not everybody in the world, like 7 billion people making 100x, because someone's losing on that 100x, right? Like, someone's paying for it ultimately, or many people are probably paying for it. But actually, the mainstream adoption is steady growth on sticky products that probably don't, like, go, whoa, and stuff. Look how much I've made. But actually just steadily maybe increasing your wealth or doing better than your mates at like when you've gone out for dinner or down the pub or something like that. Like you'd be able to show off like, hey, I'm earning 7%. What are you getting in your app? And I'm only getting 2% or 3%.
Yeah.
And stuff. And then they recommend people to come and use it as well. And stuff like the biggest marketing channels are always your own user referrals.
100%.
Cheapest way to get users as well. Like you make happy users and you'll have a marketing campaign forever.
That is the number one thing is ask people when they first used Google, where did they see a Google ad? When they first used OpenAI, did they see an OpenAI ad, like a ChatGPT's ad? No, we heard it from people. Yeah. Like, or same thing with Facebook. When Facebook was new, they had no money to advertise. Same thing with nearly every good product, every sticky product. It's just through user reference. That's it, the only way to get a billion people. Otherwise, the ad spend needed for that sort of reach is... it's not possible humanly. You'd have to spend like 500 billion or something to get that level of adoption otherwise. Yeah, yeah. So
totally.
Yeah.
And when those referred users use it, like they've got to have that feeling of like, how did I live without this in a way? So you look at Uber. Oh my God, why was I like standing on a street corner of my arm out in the rain waiting for a taxi to come past when I could have just clicked the button or the app? Or Google's a great example of, oh my God, how was I finding this stuff on the internet before? And stuff. And like the digital banks, like I can't believe I was going into a branch twice a week to deposit a check or something like that, and now I can just look at my phone and send somebody like this QR code and they can just pay me. Like we've got to find that, I think again Jordan calls it like the aha moment in the product where someone uses it for the first time and sees it and like, huh, that's why the X referred me or whatever. Like that is why they won't stop talking about it. I get it. Yes. And now I'm not going to stop talking about it. And so on. So that's what we need. And again, we talked about it right at the very start. Ultimately, a lot of that is down to UX in crypto and like building a product that's really beautiful to use and get rid of all the hurdles that like all of the crypto OGs and the crypto natives today are happy to go through, because it means they'll hopefully find that like that big pot of gold at the end.
Yes.
But other users aren't looking for a pot of gold they're using.
Last question for sure. And that is, have you seen any product in recent time in this crypto Web3 blockchain space that gave you that aha moment?
I think like Yearn Vaults in the early days in particular were really amazing, right? Like you deposit into a Yearn Vault and that's more the technology than the UI, because the Yearn UI has always like not really been super useful and stuff. I actually go back to Maker. When I first heard about Maker and was first like speaking to some people at Maker, and I learned about you hold ETH, you can put it in and you can borrow money against it without doing it. Like for me, that was like, oh my God, that's amazing. I immediately went back to, because I was in the wealth, like the digital wealth space at the time. And I was like, my first feeling was like, imagine you could do that with an ETF. Like you could borrow against an ETF that you hold, like an ETF is yielding on average 5-7% a year. And you can borrow like DAI against that at 2%. That's amazing. That would be incredible. Like I remember back then, like all the people used to have, like someone would want to buy a car, or it'd be September to like university tuition fee time, and people would have to withdraw some money to pay for their child's university tuition fees or something. And you're like, why? Like you don't need to withdraw it and suffer the losses, or maybe the market's just gone down, so you're actually amplifying your losses because you've had the withdrawal on a bad day. Just borrow, if you could borrow against it. And that's what, like back in 2018, early 2018, it was like, there was talk then of real world assets. I think it was like shipping containers, like borrowing against shipping containers and stuff back then. And people were like, wow, like I can see that. If we haven't got that by 2020, I'll be astonished. And here we are 2023, still talking about RWAs. But I think, like I remember the Dharma app back in, I don't know if you ever used Dharma, like it's long gone now, but like 2020 time. It was a beautiful onboarding and it was a beautiful yield product that just gave you some yield, and it was so, so easy to use and stuff. And like that was beautiful. But again, it was small retail users that even if you can monetize them, you earn so little and you need so many. Like you can understand why it was very difficult to make it work, because you always need another monetization strategy behind the scenes, which is why so many Web2 companies sell data, right? Because that is their monetization strategy. Yes. But there's been a handful of products. I see some of my designs of all the new bits that we're doing and stuff. And the first time I see those, sometimes I'm just like, oh, yes, that is, yes. Like we've got some new onboarding designs that like to help new users come in and stuff, and just constantly being like edited and like user tested and so on and stuff. And you just like I look at them and I'm like, yes, like that is actually, ironically, it goes quite close back to 2019 design we had back in very early Maker. And we've gone a little bit full circle, but yeah, that is like the aha moment for onboarding into DeFi.
Fantastic. I'll check it out. I'll definitely sign up, check it out. Even though I won't stake anything or do any earning, I want to see the experience first.
Yeah, you can deposit some stuff as well. I'm not going to.
Yeah, definitely. I'll check it out after this. Yeah. So look, thank you so much. On your note, what I'll do is I'll put the links to underneath the description, wherever this goes. So other people can also check out the UX and the UI for themselves. And yeah, just want to wish you best of luck for continuing to build the next generation of financial products and like this decentralized or DeFi space. So yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Awesome. No, thank you so much for having me. Time is flowing by, but it's been a really wonderful chat.
We have gone like way over time. But it was
This was great.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening or watching this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. By now, you know the drill. Leave a comment or share this episode with a friend and leave a review. I would love to hear from you. So that's why my DMs are open. Reach out to me, especially if you are a founder building a product in Web3. Then I would love to hear from you. What are your challenges? Is there anything that I can help you or my community can help you with? Thank you once again and wish you best of luck in building your startup or your project.